Translation purport is Deva in Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of God had said, the great Saint Narada Muni is very merciful. By his curse, he showed greatest favor to both of you, who were made after material opulence, and who had thus become blind. Although you fell from the higher planet, Sarvaloka, Swargaloka, and become trees, you were most favored by him. I knew all these incidents from the very beginning. Purport. It is now confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the curse of a devotee is always to be regarded as mercy. As Krishna, God is all good. A Vaishnava is also all good. Whatever he does is good for everyone. This is explained in the following verses. Om Ajnana Trimandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhyasya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter we are studying is the deliverance of Nalakuer and Manigruha. So in the previous verses is mentioned how the two sons of Kubera were completely intoxicated by wealth, power, and of course, living in the Swargaloka, the heavenly planets, they had everything possible needed for full sense enjoyment. But it is explained that the living beings who are living in a higher planetary system, not only they have access to material sense gratification, but also you have to be very much qualified to go to the heavenly planets. As we all know that in this particular planet which we are living on, if you do many pious deeds, then your elevation is to the heavenly planets. And if you do sinful activities or impious activities, then of course we go down to the hellish planets. Of course it's relative whether we say go up to heavenly planets or go down to hellish planets, because the planets are all floating around in the universe. So there is up and down is kind of relative. But in our own understanding, to see in practical terms, that something which is up is higher, something which is lower, and something which is the bottom is lower or less importance. So here the two brothers, they were completely intoxicated by wealth and opulence, that they were enjoying the pastimes with young women bathing in the lake completely naked. And when Narada Muni happened to come during that time, They did not show the respect which one should show to a saintly person. General Vedic culture is teaching us in our understanding that whenever a saintly person comes, then we have to get up and show our respects and honor him and welcome him. Just like we see that Indra, when he was also intoxicated and enjoying the Apsaras dancing, and Dhruvasa Muni came that time, and he did not pay respect to Dhruvasa Muni. So Dhruvasa Muni cursed him that he has to come to the material world for 1 year and take up a hog's body. So of course that curse also was kind of a boon, and to bring Indra to senses, to realize, make him realize that he is in a very, very powerful position, and therefore he has to follow all rules and regulations. So regardless whether we are in a very powerful position or not, we all have to follow all the etiquettes of culture. And here, Manigriva and Nalakuer were completely mindless about the presence of Narada Muni. So Narada Muni, of course, became a little angry. Generally, Narada Muni doesn't become angry. He's a very sober person. He is completely absorbed in chanting the holy names, the glories of the Lord. He's not interested in material sense enjoyment or material facilities of anger, greed, lust. But here in this case, he becomes a little bit disturbed by these two persons. Therefore, he curses them to become trees. Now, in the previous verses mentioned that they were cursed to become trees for 100 years. Now, it is not your or my 100 years. It is mentioned the 100 years of the demigods. So, it's a very, very long time to become a tree. Because in a tree body, basically the consciousness is at a very low level that you can hardly experience anything. Just recently I saw one picture of a tree in Africa. And that tree was 6,000 years old and still going strong. And there was a young man standing next to the tree. And it looked like an ant standing next to a tree. So you can imagine how big the tree is. My estimation was that if 50 people held their hands together and go around the tree, it would be just about circumambulating the tree. It's a huge tree. Also in America, there are trees in Redwood Forest. And I actually personally seen it myself when I was traveling from Seattle all the way to San Francisco. And I had to go through that area. And those trees are huge trees. So much so that there's one tree which is kind of split from the middle. And it's got a kind of a bridge inside. And you can take your whole Ford van right through it. So imagine if such a big van can go right through the tree, how big the tree must be. Not only that, then out of my curiosity, you know, since I'm here, let me have a little bit of sightseeing. And there was a gift shop there. And how was the gift shop made? There was one tree which was cut from the top, and then the inside was all hollowed out, and there was a whole shop inside. So just imagine that, you know, you walk into a gift shop, and it is not artificial walls and things. It's a natural tree. You are within the tree. Then there are some trees which are cut and left on the side, and there's all the rings from the middle to the outside. And there are different markers on each of the rings, kind of saying the history of man. At this point, when this tree was 5 years old, this is what happened. When the tree was 10 years old, this is what happened. It goes around all the history. And it's something like 3,500 years of history. So you can imagine these trees are still growing with long, long lifespan. So in one sense, it is kind of a curse to have a tree body. You cannot do anything in a tree body. We have a very clear understanding by Prabhupada's mercy that when we get human birth, it actually gives us an opportunity to have a higher understanding. We can actually inquire about the higher nature, Athato Brahma Jignasa. That we make inquiries into higher nature of life. What is the purpose of life? What is the meaning of life? What are we here? What is the purpose? Why we are here in the first place? What we need to do? All these questions can be asked. And then we have also the intelligence to understand the answers to these questions. And if you have made sufficient inquiries and you have sufficient answers to your inquiries, why we are here, then obviously you will know that our purpose is not to stay here longer than necessity, but to go back to the spiritual world and be freed from the engagement of this material body. And as we know from the scriptures, there are 8,400,000 species of life. Each one is caught up in a different body according to their desires, according to their karma. They have a particular lifespan in that particular body. But as trees, you cannot inquire. What is the purpose of life? You will not be freed from the engagement of the tree body. Unless, of course, someone is very pious and he cuts you down and he uses your wood to make the deity of Lord Jagannath, then, you know, you are definitely going to be liberated from that tree body, or if someone cuts wood, and in the traditional fashion, they make preparations to offer to the Lord through the fire, then maybe there's a chance that you may get liberated. But otherwise, there's no chance. So here it is mentioned that these two brothers, Manigriva and Nalakuvera, were cursed to become trees. But because they were cursed by a great sage, as Prabhupada mentions here, that even a curse of a devotee is supposed to be considered as the mercy personification. It's as good as the Lord's mercy. Why? Because when Narada Muni cursed these two brothers, they were cursed to become trees where? In Gokula. Gokula is not an ordinary place. It is the abode of the Supreme Lord, where the childhood pastime takes place. So it is a very, very transcendental place where these two brothers were cursed to become trees. And later on, of course, as we know from the past times, we're still in April, so it's still enough time for us to prepare our minds and meditate for Kartik, because we all look forward to Kartik, and Kartik is a time when we remember the beautiful, sweet pastimes of Mother Yashoda and young baby Krishna. And in that pastime, we know that the whole incident led up to Krishna being tied to a grinding mortar, and then later on, Krishna was draining the grinding mortar and right through to between the two trees, and the trees fell and liberated Manigriva and Nalakuvera, and they went back to the spiritual world. Now, not everybody is fortunate enough to take birth in Gokul, even as a tree. In the Vrindavan holy down the Braj, every aspect, even a grain of sand, is considered transcendental. Of course, when we go to Vrindavan and we walk around and we see a lot of things, and we don't take it, we don't have an understanding that these are all transcendental entities who have fortune to be born or be present in the holy dham. And we take it for granted that it's just another elements in nature, except that when someone points out that this is a special tree. Especially I've seen devotees who go on parikrama. And when you're going on a parikrama, we come to this tree where he's saying that this is where Krishna jumped into the Jamuna River to subdue the Kaliyanag, the snake. And we sort of stand there and we kind of pay obeisances and go over the head and sort of touch your hair. And we do all kinds of things. But then there are hundreds of other trees in Vrindavan. They're equally powerful, equally potent, because each and every tree in Vrindavan is a wish-fulfilling tree. It's transcendental. It is not an ordinary tree. But we don't have that kind of respect for those trees. Specifically, we have respect for a particular tree which is pointed out to us that this particular pastime took place here. Even like when you go on the parikrama with Imli Tal, and we go there and say, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here. So we have respect for that tree. But there are many other trees. We don't care. So in other words, if we are cursed by a devotee, then it should be considered as a blessing that it is going to bring us liberation and freedom from further material contamination or further material bondage. And as Prabhupada mentions in the following verses, as Prabhupada says in the purport, this is explained in the following verses. So the verse 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, leading up, will explain how it is important to actually appreciate the devotees of the Lord. Just one of these following, I will not read that verse completely, but just a small line of the purport, Prabhupada says, begins the purport with saying, sadhu sanga, sarva shastra ke, lava matra sadhu sanga, sarva siddhi hai. So, it is so important that we understand the good fortune when we have to associate with devotees. Srila Prabhupada, in his purpose, in especially in Bhagavad Gita, he mentions many times that whatever devotional activity we perform, it has to be performed with the understanding of associating with devotees. When we associate with devotees, then it is a great boon on us that it allows us to actually be free from material contamination, and we become purified simply by associating with devotees. So we have opportunity to associate with so many devotees, but we take it for granted that, you know, it is so, because it's so easy to associate with devotees by Prabhupada's mercy within our institute. There's so many hundreds and hundreds of devotees. Everywhere you go, any ISKCON center you visit, you'll find devotees. Either devotees staying in the ashram or devotees staying outside who are associated with that particular center. And you get an opportunity to associate with them. Just like yesterday, we are observing Ramanami, and hundreds of devotees came here. It's an opportunity for us to associate with them. So every day, especially here at the manor, I think we are very fortunate that by the mercy of Prabhupada and Radha Gokulananda, hundreds and hundreds of devotees come here to give us association. But we don't take that association seriously. You know, we just take it for granted that it's just people. But we don't have that approach with the humility in our heart that I am so fortunate that I have got opportunity to associate with devotees. How rare it is to associate with devotees, you can imagine, that if each one of us is separated from the devotees and dotted around this planet Earth, where there are 7 billion people, and you're in the midst of hundreds of people where there is no devotees, how would you fare with that situation? This we can ask for those devotees who are going through hardship during the early days, especially, say, places like Russia, where there were so much difficulties to even associate freely. Even to be seen in a devotee garb was dangerous. You would immediately be imprisoned. You could not chant freely. So they were having, you know, secret meetings in someone's house where nobody knows what's going on. And in the small groups, you would sit down and do chanting and appreciate the philosophy by reading Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. To the extent that they were not even having access to the books. Somehow some books are smuggled in and they would handwrite them, hundreds of copies, and then they would distribute amongst the devotees who are interested in Krishna consciousness. Now if we ask them the luxury of hundreds of devotees, luxury of a warehouse full of books, it is opulence. But we have all these things. And because we have all these things, we don't have appreciation for it. So sometimes it is necessary to be deprived of these things. When there is deprivation from those things, especially good association, the transcendental books, the prasadam, then when you get, you'll have a far greater appreciation. Those people, of course, who are maybe, say, unfortunate and they are kind of hospitalized in the hospital for, say, a month or two, and the doctors have made a strict ruling, no food from outside. You're put on a very strict diet, whatever is cooked in the hospital kitchen, that is all you get. Can you imagine? For 2 months, you're deprived of prasadam. And some very fortunate person who kind of feels a lot of compassion in his heart, he's saying, this devotee hasn't got prasadam for a long time. He sneaks in a mangal at his feet or something and very secretly hands over some prasadam to you. How much appreciative you would be for that prasadam. You would have great respect for that. Because you have been deprived of it. So similarly, when you are deprived of good association, we then come in good association, we have great regard and respect. But otherwise, we just take it for granted. For example, you know, we are living here in Bhaktivinoda Manor, and Srila Prabhupada explains that wherever the Lord is worshipped with devotion, that place becomes Vaikuntha. It becomes spiritual place. It becomes a place of pilgrimage. It becomes a holy dham. So we are living here in the holy dham. Every nook and corner of the property which is under the ownership of Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda is his holy dham. His holy dham is spread all over. But how many of us feel that when we are walking around in the grounds doing our japa, that we are walking in Vrindavan? We don't feel Vrindavan. But we look forward to go to India during Kartik or Gaur Purnima and think, I'm going to Vrindavan. And you're so excited, you know, you run to Heathrow Airport and with great excitement board your plane, you land in Delhi, and then still you're not happy because Vrindavan is still 3 hours away. And as you're approaching Vrindavan, immediately you begin to start saying prayers. And when the car stops, the first thing you do is come out of the car and pay your obeisances to Vrindavan down. But this is also Vrindavan. But we have no appreciation, right? But we think this is our home. But Vrindavan is in India. But Prabhupada says, wherever Krishna is Vrindavan. Wherever devotees are, is Vrindavan. Why? Because wherever Krishna is, you'll find his devotees. Wherever his devotees are, you'll find Krishna. Krishna and devotees cannot be separated. So even if the devotees are present, Krishna is present. Krishna is present in their hearts. So we don't see Krishna in their heart. And then we are also very quick to make a judgment on who is at what level of their devotion. So someone who is considered very elevated, you have very high regard and respect for that person. And the other person says, well, he is only a devotee. No, he is not still pure. But who is to say who is pure and who is not pure? I remember many years ago sitting in this temple room, and there was used to be a Vyasasan in that corner there. And one person was giving a class, and before he started class, he put his hands together and said, I am offering my respect to all of you. Although I am sitting on this seat and speaking, but you are all sitting there, I want to offer my respects to all of you. I was thinking, why he is paying respects to all the devotees sitting in the audience when he is a sannyasi, he is an elevated personality. Then the next sentence came that amongst you could be Narada Muni or a great sage or saintly person who is sitting there, but they are covered by a different body. So I don't know who is who. All of you are sitting here. We just take it as our present situation, that in the present life, this is the body I have got and this is who I am. But in our previous lives, we could be very, very greatly elevated persons who have come here simply to give association to the fallen living entities, or we have simply come here to assist Srila Prabhupada in his missionary work, and we don't know who is who. So therefore, it is very, very important that we do not see anybody as insignificant. Actually, we see everybody as very important. And this is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left his 8 stanzas of the Sikshastikam prayers, one of them is Chinarapi Sunichana, Tarorapi Sunichana. We chant this every morning, at least we used to. And in Sikshastikam prayers, it is giving us a very deep understanding of our culture. And Mahaprabhu is saying, not that only we have to become humble, we have to become tolerant, free from false ego, but we should be ready to offer all respect unto others. And this is a very important point. When Mahaprabhu is saying, amani na, mani dena, he's saying, give respect to all others. So he's not saying different categories of people, different categories of devotees. He's saying all others. And that means devotees and non-devotees. Because Prabhupada actually teaches us that everybody, regardless of what their position is, they are a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Some have awakened to that understanding. Some are still sleeping to that understanding. But still they are devotees of the Lord. Because ultimately every single living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, we are all connected with the Supreme Lord. Only a thing is that temporarily we have forgotten our position. And it is only time, in the period according to the Lord's mercy, we'll be awakened. And when you awaken to this understanding, then we know our true position, then we serve the Supreme Lord in the spirit of devotion. But at the same time, amanina manidena, we must give importance to everyone, regardless. And when we develop this attitude of respect and honor, then there is loving exchange amongst the devotees. There is happiness all around. But why we find that there are disturbances, there are unhappinesses in our lives, trials and tribulations are coming, because we are not respecting everyone. And you see, everyone respects everyone, then automatically it becomes very, very wonderful atmosphere. But still I see sometimes in my experience in visiting all different countries, different temples, there are devotees who have likes and dislikes amongst devotees. I can understand sometimes that we may have some dislike for those who are demoniac people, you know, or those who are not devotees of Krishna. But those who are devotees of Krishna, how is it possible there is likes and dislikes? Because devotees are all glorious. Only thing is that we don't see them as glorious. We see them with our tinted eyes and try to see them not as pure devotees. We see them as persons who have just become devotees. Or they may not be in externally showing the symptoms of a Mahabhagavat. But generally, you see, one who is a Mahabhagavat, he will never show his symptoms to anyone. Because he doesn't want to become an offender. So he will keep his internal position to himself. But those who go around proclaiming to me Mahabhagavats, and of course those are pretenders, those are cheaters. But a Mahabhagavat doesn't need to show external symptoms. But if you are in close proximity to a great saintly person, you will see that you will feel happiness, because his heart is full of happiness, and therefore the happiness is flowing out of his heart. And when you are in close proximity of that person, then you will get happiness also. Just like I was saying on Sunday, when we were releasing the cows, you know, that the cows by nature are very, very, very peaceful animals. And if we are disturbed in our own mind, and if you go in the close proximity of the cows, you will see all the disturbance will come down and it will become very peaceful. Because I made a mistake. I said 27 meters. I think it is 27 feet. But anyway, nonetheless, if you are in a close proximity of the cows, then you will naturally become very peaceful. You will be free from all kinds of difficulties, especially all kind of lust, greed, anger. This will be subdued simply by the association with the cows. Because cows by nature are blessed by the Supreme Lord. And not only that, but as we all know, that the cows are the embodiment of all the demigods. So if all the demigods are within the body of the cow, then you can imagine how powerful and important that place must be, the body of the cow. So it is very important that even sadhus, saintly persons, are also in a very similar position, that their hearts are filled with love for Krishna. And therefore, when you associate with them, then you also become very peaceful. I was one time traveling in South India, and I had good fortune to go and meet one of the acharyas of Udupi Math in Udupi Krishna's place in there are 8 maths there, and each math has each acharya, and one of the acharyas, I was fortunate enough to meet him, and it was his turn that one year to worship Udupi Krishna. So when we went to see him, he was sitting on a not a high seat, but it was kind of a wooden platform, and I was traveling with Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, so I was carrying a piece of embroidered carpet, which was his sitting cushion, you can say. So I was just about to place it next to, nearby, the acharya, and he sort of, so I was saying, why is he asking me to move away? So I said, fine. So I went further back, and then I placed the cushion for Maharaj to sit, and then Maharaj sat down, and then I sat down, and then he started speaking in Hindi. So he was conversing with Maharaj. And after the pleasantries were done, exchanges were done, and everything was done, I am a very curious person, so I said, out of curiosity, sir, please forgive me, my ignorance, but why did you ask me to move so far? You know, you're an acharya, he's also an acharya, he's a guru, he's a saintly person. And he said that from the heart of the person, 3 meters wide, the consciousness spreads. And if someone sits closer than the 3-meter radius, then that person's consciousness and your consciousness will overlap. Now the trouble is, this is his explanation, that whoever is the more powerful will subdue the other one. That's okay, it's good understanding. So I think that if Maharaj, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj sitting next to him, then he's a saintly person, he's serving Prabhupada, he's a pure devotee, he would influence you. On the other hand, if you think that he's any lesser, then you are powerful, and by your own words, you would influence him. So either way, you will not become contaminated. But anyway, that was his thing. But my understanding was that at least that point, and then later I made some research, and there is some scriptural references, that the consciousness of a person sitting next to another person, the two persons' consciousness, if they overlap, then there is kind of exchange going on. And I would say that if the purer one will influence the impure one. But I suppose on the flip side, there could be, if you are more contaminated, then you would contaminate the pure person, because contamination is sometimes more powerful. I don't know. But anyway, the point is that we have to honor and respect devotees, as Prabhupada is mentioning here, that if you do not honor devotees properly, then we can get into a lot of difficulties and offenses. Although the devotee in himself doesn't take an offense, just like Amrish Maharaj, when he was honoring Durvasa Muni, and it was Ekadasi breakfast time, so he was in a dilemma to break his fast. At the same time, he cannot eat before the guest. That's the etiquette. So while Durvasa Muni was taking his bath, Amrish Maharaj took just a drop of water to break his Ekadasi fast. But Durvasa Muni became very much angered and said, how can you bypass the etiquette? And he became very offensive towards Amrish Maharaj. Of course, the Supreme Lord is not happy with this situation. He's saying, how you can offend him? He has not broken any violation. Just because you don't have a better understanding. So, of course, we know the story that Sudarshan Chakra was invoked and is running after Durvasa, and he went to Brahma, he went to Lord Shiva, finally comes to Vishnu, and says, nothing doing. Although Sudarshan Chakra is invoked from me, but I cannot recall it unless until you go and pay your respects to the person you offended. So, of course, from that story we understand that a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, he never takes offense. But that doesn't mean that we should think, oh, you know, devotees don't take offense, so if I kind of offend them, it is okay. It is not okay. The devotee will not take an offense, but the Lord Himself, He doesn't take it lightly. He takes it as an offense. And therefore, then we have to pay a reaction to our offenses. Therefore, here, in this particular section, when Narada Muni came, Manigriva and Nalakuer were very offensive in their behavior, that they did not honor Narada Muni. And therefore, Narada Muni cursed him. And that curse, as we understand from Prabhupada, is saying that it was a boon for Manigriva and Nalakuer. And more to the point, that Krishna is saying here that I already knew about all these things. And therefore, when they were standing in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, he wanted to free them because they have now done their stint in a tree body for almost 100 demigod years. So many things we can learn from this particular section, although it's a very short purport, but it's a very deep point. One, we should be very mindful and not to offend any devotees. We should always be respectful, regardless of their position. We are not in a position to decide whether he is Madhyam, Uttama, or Kanishta. That is not our position. Our position is that he is a devotee of the Lord, and therefore I must honor and respect the devotee of the Lord. Second, Krishna knows everything. He knows every single act, not in this world, but the whole of creation. He knows every single entity, what they are doing. So he is a record of everything. So we should be very careful that we are always in the good books of Krishna and not in the bad books of Krishna. You know, therefore, we must be always mindful in our devotional practice that we are always thinking. And when you're always thinking, means you're always conscious. And you're conscious of who? Conscious of Krishna and his devotees. And therefore, if you are conscious of Krishna and his devotees, then you will never go wrong in your spiritual life. And your spiritual life will be one good, happy experience. Otherwise, we have a mixed kind of devotional life. We'll get good with the bad. Mm-hmm. Just like sometimes if someone is a little spaced out and he has not picked out the small stones in the rice and dal, and when you're enjoying the rice and dal and all of a sudden a stone comes in your between the teeth, it is not a very good experience. It's a nasty experience. So similarly, in our devotional life, we have good with the bad, then you will have some nasty experience which are unpleasant. And due to that, sometimes then we feel that all that is mentioned about devotional life is very pleasant, it's very happy. Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And, you know, one who takes devotional life is always immersed in happiness and ecstasy and blissfulness. But then in our own lives we find that we are not experiencing that. That is because we are having good with the bad. So if we follow our lives according to the principles of the scriptures, according to the examples set by many wonderful stalwart devotees who are our role models, and simply follow their footsteps, then our life will become very blissful and a very happy one, and we won't have any difficulties, and therefore there is no cause for someone to curse us. Only blessings. So it is 8:35. I'll stop here. If anybody has any comments, any questions.